Sing It, Joe Walsh. Great song from the 70s, Meadows, from the album The Smoker You Drink, The Player You Get. Yes, that's what it was called. And it had the good song Rocky Mountain Way on there. One I've jammed with in several bands, the great Joe Vitale on drums. A very interesting time musically, indeed. Anyway, your host, Mark Anderson, coming to you live today. Yes, you heard it correct, live. I've been on a bit of a hiatus lately, through pretty much all of August into September. Many personal matters to deal with. That's still going to be the situation for a while. Lots of demands in terms of paid writing gigs and this and that. One of the things that I expect to cover this coming Thursday, right in my neck of the woods, who knew, in Southwest Michigan, the former Australian PM, Malcolm Turnbull, is going to be speaking to the Economic Club of Southwestern Michigan. I expect, hopefully, to be covering that, to get in there with the proper press credentials. And I'll announce right up front that if I get a related call to that during this show, I have to take the call, because it's not easy to get through to those that allow those or offer those press credentials. So that being said, there's many other topics. Ron Avery is working on a construction project. He is a licensed architect, so he is not accompanying me today, either with the audio-only show that today is, nor with video, obviously. Much to cover. There's articles I have coming up in American Free Press. I'll mention a little bit here. One of them is one that Ron and I recently, the last time we did a dual show, we discussed this. I went to Royal Oak, Michigan near Detroit and covered the legacy of the late great radio priest Father Charles Edward Coughlin. And I have an article coming up on that in the next American Free Press. It goes to bed at the end of this week. Check it out. It's about the 25th year since his National Shrine of the Little Flower Basilica was christened a national shrine. Actually, once 2023 comes around, that'll officially be the 25th year. So it's the pending or upcoming 25th year of that great church being christened a national shrine. And as I note in this article, giving a little preview of what's going to come up on AFP's website and or in the hard copy, this church stands mightily in eternal vigilance against the predations of the plutocratic class, which from the latter 1920s until the early 40s, that plutocratic class was in the crosshairs of this crusading Canadian-born cleric, Father Coughlin. And with the faithful backing of then-Bishop Michael Gallagher of the Detroit Archdiocese, Father Coughlin, by the mid-30s, reached a peak radio listenership of 30 million plus in his quest to defeat the merciless money machine that had brought unprecedented war, poverty, and despair upon the world. And so the article goes into considerable detail. That's just a little whetting of the appetite, as it were. You can contact AmericanFreePress.net online for more information, to read articles, to learn how to subscribe, or you can email subscriptions@AmericanFreePress.net, and I can make sure you start out with whatever edition you want. You can backtrack a little for a short subscription, which is like 8 issues over 16 weeks for right around $17.76, or a yearly one, which is, I believe, about $59. I don't think that's changed. It comes out every week. It's packed with lots of good articles. Writers like John Friend and myself and Donald Jeffries and several others. Paul Angel, the managing editor himself, does quite a bit of writing, does a column. Chris Pethrick, the executive editor, adds some articles here and there. Much to read, much to learn, much to take action on. Now, another article I've got coming up in the next edition, and this one I'll go into a little more detail as I get through some announcements here. We heard about recently, and I wrote about it, where 19 state attorneys general contacted Lawrence Larry Fink of BlackRock, the CEO, BlackRock being one of the big index fund managers. The other two are State Street and Vanguard. Those three companies alone have something like $20 trillion under management. And those 19 attorneys general contacted Larry, complaining that apparently, according to Mr. Fink's own admissions, that BlackRock, and in particular, which is much like the others, was basically requiring clients directly, indirectly, harshly, not so harshly, but always getting that in there, requiring them to basically march to the tune of climate change and LGBTQ matters and other leftist, internationalist, socialist, elitist protocols. And basically what it meant was that companies affiliated with these index fund managers would have to not just talk the talk, but walk the walk along the politically correct avenues of life in order to be in the club, in order to be in that big financial arena. But now we learn, in the wake of that, two of those same attorneys general, two out of those 19, and that is, let me see here, let's not get it wrong, that is the attorneys general of Missouri and of Louisiana. Louisiana's AG is Jeff Landry, and Missouri's AG is Eric Schmidt. Nothing to do, of course, with Eric Schmidt of Bilderberg. And those two offered a joint press announcement September 1st. And what happened was they filed a lawsuit back in May. And this is based on Mr. Schmidt and the other AG saying that the federal government, the Biden administration, during the COVID scare, during the so-called pandemic, went into heavy censorship mode, but is farming out the censorship to the big tech companies in the social media sphere. And so these two AGs are suing, and they filed the suit back in May. And get this, they won the lawsuit as of July. So some of this maybe didn't make as big of rumblings in the news as it should have. But otherwise, this would have been reported longer ago, and it's possible that other RBN hosts might have touched upon this back when it was fresher news. But it's still really good news because it kind of coincides with the larger number of attorneys general, again, writing to BlackRock about all the financial bias and mismanagement and basically a form of censorship. So now in the wake of that, we see this lawsuit being won, but according to the Missouri and Louisiana attorneys general, the Biden administration is not being altogether cooperative. But they're saying that the May 22 lawsuit sought to expose, quote, how top Biden administration officials allegedly colluded with social media companies to censor freedom of speech on a number of topics, including COVID-19. So it wasn't just about the pandemic, but much of it was during that. And the Department of Justice, of course, that's part of the greater Biden administration, once the lawsuit was won by the AGs in July, the DOJ was forced to reveal to these two plaintiff states several details on what amounted to 88 communications between the Biden administration and social media companies during the so-called pandemic. Attorney General Smith of Missouri noted, quote, in response to Missouri and Louisiana's interrogatories, the defendants, that's the Biden administration et al., identified 45 federal officials at Department of Homeland Security, CISA, that's CISA, the Centers for Disease Control, NIAID, I'm not going to look up all these acronyms right now, and the Office of the Surgeon General, all of which, all these agencies are contained either in the Department of Homeland Security or Health and Human Services, and they all communicate with social media platforms about misinformation and censorship. They've been doing this. The two AGs' joint statement also points out, but in those responses, these defendants did not provide information about any federal officials at other federal agencies of whom they are aware who engage in such communications with social media platforms about misinformation and censorship. Though the plaintiffs, the AGs, had specifically asked for this highly relevant information. The defendant's document production, that is what they did hand over, however, reveals that such officials at other federal agencies exist. For example, their emails include extensive copying of officials at the Census Bureau, and they also include communications involving the Departments of Treasury and State. And that joint statement of the AGs goes on to say, and they mention federal elections divisions, at least one of them, they go on to say the following: beyond the Department of Justice's production, Meta, for example, has disclosed that at least 32 federal officials, including senior officials at the FDA, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, there it is, and the White House itself, have communicated with Meta about content moderation on its platforms, many of whom were not disclosed in response to plaintiffs' interrogatories to the defendant, to the defendants. YouTube disclosed 11 federal officials engaged in such communications with social media, including officials at the Census Bureau and the White House, many of whom were also not disclosed by defendants. And there's much more that could be said, but what I'm saying to AFP readers and what I'm saying to RBN listeners now, live and on the archive, is readers and listeners are encouraged to immediately phone, write, or otherwise contact these two attorneys general, Missouri and Louisiana, and other attorneys general across the nation to either thank them for their important work, as is the case here, or to urge them to follow the lead of Missouri and Louisiana, and it's best to send hard copy, faxed, or mailed letters, because they're likely to get the most consideration, and sometimes accompany those by phone calls. Clearly, the federal government and its many agencies, this is my own writing here, my own comment, are trying to suppress speech in a manner that they cannot directly do because of the First Amendment to the Constitution. So instead, they hire out this suppression to the big movers and shakers in the social media sphere. So very important. If you live in Missouri or Louisiana, thank your AGs. If you don't, write to them and urge them to get on board. You could send them a link or some sort of reference or even a copy of the press release from the Missouri website. If you go to the Missouri Attorney General's website, you'll see this joint statement. It's pretty obvious. And the headline of it is, Missouri and Louisiana Attorneys General ask the court to compel the Federal Department of Justice to produce communications between top officials and social media companies. And they mean all the communications, not just some of them like they've gotten so far since apparently winning this suit in July. So if you want to send a letter or a fax to your AG, you can print this off the Missouri website. I didn't check the Louisiana website. And it could be part of your fax or your mailed letter to your AG. Very important for readers and listeners to get directly involved. This is going to be more effective, typically, than contacting your legislators. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. So that's some important stuff. Our attorneys general across this country, 19 or 20 of them at this point, are doing some very good things, some of it long overdue. And I can imagine them getting more involved in election integrity, which, of course, I've discussed on this show many times. And that has to do with coverage I recently did, writing a report and talking on this show and other shows about the recent August 2021 Moment of Truth Summit that was held by the MyPillow entrepreneur Mike Lindell. And I won't get into detail on that except to say that it's still important for listeners to do what Mike Lindell and many others at that summit said, and that's to contact your county election officials, not your state AGs. Now we're talking about county level election officials, perhaps even at the state level, but definitely at the county level, and you can still do this, and it's still important, ask your county election clerks for a type of record from elections, such as the November 2020 election especially. It's a type of record called the cast vote records, or CVR. According to Garland Favrito of Voters Organized for Trusted Election Results in Georgia, that's voterga.org, a very important website, these cast vote records, or CVRs, are not some miscellaneous thing. As he said recently, quote, CVRs are used to tabulate election results. And he went on to explain, let me see here. They are exported out of the database that performed the tabulation for the election. See, so they're a very key thing. And he added, the counties must have the original database record of the election. If they don't, they're violating the law. Cast vote records are one record for each ballot. They are essential. You need cast vote records to produce the results. You can't do it without them because they are in the database. You cannot produce the results without these CVRs being in the database. That's the epicenter of the whole election report. So perhaps these state attorneys general will get more involved in this kind of matter that I'm talking about now, now that they've covered the big index fund managers, BlackRock, for example, and now that they're zeroing in on Biden administration censorship via farming out suppression to the private sector in the social media companies to skirt around the First Amendment. Very important things that our AGs can do. Attorneys general are taking on much more importance now, it appears to me. So lots of important stuff there that listeners live and on the archive can get directly involved in. It's very important at this juncture, ladies and gentlemen, that we not just understand the deeper parameters and the broader spectrums of these issues. Understanding is great. That's the prerequisite for taking action. But once we learn, once we understand, once we have these things nailed down in our minds and we decide what issues matter to each of us, it's very important to take that next step, that final step beyond learning, beyond understanding and applying it, taking some kind of action whenever and wherever possible. Even small actions, letters to the editor, to your local paper, handing out a few flyers at an important event can matter and can help. The worst thing to do is nothing, of course, but getting a hold of these AGs and what these AGs are doing is very encouraging, because they have considerable authority and latitude. And they don't seem to be quite as hung up on all the minutiae as many legislators who seem like they're, how would you say it, intellectually constipated half the time. Like they just can't seem to know what to do. They play both sides of the issue. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. And you really don't know where they stand half the time unless they're fairly principled, like Rand Paul, for example. So, important stuff there. Please take it into account. Please get involved. If you have any questions.
Another holiday weekend is marred by deaths. I'm Peter Serafine with today's Liberty Minute. Two dead in Norfolk, three shot in Brooklyn, and seven dead are among the 46 shot in Chicago over the holiday weekend. Some will say we need gun control to stop mass shootings, but not so fast there, gun grabbers. Gun control didn't stop the 10 dead and 15 injured in mass stabbing events in Canada over the weekend. Guns are tools, just like knives, and also just like knives, they can be misused for evil. In fact, so can household chemicals, cars, fertilizer, prescription drugs, and many other things that we use every day. We need to focus on the real problems, criminals and evil. Fix the morality of society. And that'll do a lot more to stop violence than taking away a tool. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem, Parabellum.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Hello, welcome to the next segment here on Stop the Presses. Your host, Mark Anderson, here on 12 September 2022. Ron Avery has the day off. And I hope everybody's having a great, what feels like fall coming here in Southwest Michigan, at least. The temperatures have went from a lovely mid-70s with hardly a cloud or chemtrail in the sky. Low humidity, gentle breezes down to the mid-50s today and kind of rainy off and on. It definitely feels like a Midwestern autumn nearly upon us, which isn't altogether a bad thing, of course. Great fall colors are just around the corner, before my wife and I head back to Tejas before too long to see how things are going at the lovely border wall and other cheery issues. But also mentioning that another recent article in American Free Press, again, go to AmericanFreePress.net, or you can call 888-699-NEWS Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time to be safe. And you can get a short subscription, like I mentioned, 8 issues over 16 weeks. And our most recent edition, number 37 and 38, number 39 and 40 is going to be going to bed pretty soon. But in this most recent edition, I also did an article that I've mentioned on this show before and other shows, Top Bankers, Economists Gather in Wyoming. And this is very important. I think I mentioned recently that something you don't hear very often, a member of the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, spoke at this meeting, and rarely do the BIS representatives, as it's known, make themselves highly visible, at least in the United States, in familiar venues. But this 45th meeting of the Jackson Hole get-together, Jackson Hole, Wyoming, of major bankers from around the world and economists and some commentators and whatnot, academics, there's a lot that can be said about this. And in past shows, I've gotten into it a little bit. And there's just so much that can be flushed out of this to get a full reading of how to respond to what was said. Recently, I talked about how Augustin Carstens, a longtime Bank of Mexico guy who's now pretty high up at the Bank for International Settlements, he talked about on August 26th, it was at a luncheon, he called for a new form of globalism, or as he termed it, a better and more sustainable form of globalization. But I may or may not have talked about, and it's worth reiterating if I didn't, the fact that Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, also spoke there, the Federal Reserve, our private central bank, and he talked about what Paul Volcker did in the 1970s when he was head of the New York Fed, the New York Federal Reserve branch, one of 12 branches of the Fed. And he was, of course, involved in those all-important federal open market committee meetings, which are not even open to the president. They're not even open to a single member of Congress, the House or the Senate. That's how exclusive they are. And he talked about that Paul Volcker tamed inflation in the 80s when he became head of the Fed, after actually causing that inflation in the 70s when he was with the New York branch of the Federal Reserve Bank. So he's with the New York branch in the 70s, caused some of the inflation, and then in the 80s became the actual Fed governor under the president, where Janet Yellen is now, and or where Janet Yellen was and where Jerome Powell is now, excuse me. And so on one side of the fence, Volcker causes the inflation or helps cause it in the 70s, and then he's called in to tame it in the 80s as, you know, the actual head of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. And what Dick Eastman pointed out, and this is very important, was that it all was a scam to consolidate banking and undermine the savings and loan industry. And that's what was not said by the head of the Fed, Jerome Powell, at this Jackson Hole, Wyoming meeting, excuse me. But a really important point in this short segment, before I get into Roe v. Wade a little bit, there's more to be said about Roe v. Wade after the bottom of the hour, a really important point, and this might carry over a little bit into the bottom of the hour, and after that, along with Roe v. Wade, was what Oliver Hadorn, the author of Social Credit Economics, mentioned in light of this Jackson Hole meeting. And that has nothing to do with the Chinese social credit, far from it. Just take that into account. And Oliver correctly noted that all this raising of interest rates to fight inflation is actually pro-inflation. It's actually going to add to the cost of goods and services, because the cost of borrowing, that goes up for small businesses, it goes up for producers, wholesalers, retailers. And when that cost of borrowing goes up, which is part of their business scheme, part of their business plan, that's among the costs, along with property taxes and utilities and raw materials and whatnot. Those are among the costs that are passed on to the end consumer in what's called cost push inflation. Because there are two kinds of inflation: cost push, which I just described, and demand pull, which is the kind that many put too much in.
Drown in incomplete capacity. Strangers thought them old when the fear it calls. How we drown in stylistic audacity. Charge the common ground.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, You have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Welcome to the second half of Stop the Presses today, 12 September 2022. And I've been going through some headlines from recent articles, mainly in AFP. And there is much to say here. And to kind of put a cherry on top of what I was talking about before the bottom of the hour break and station ID, I wanted to stress, although I've referred to this article before that I wrote about the recent meeting, August 25 through 27 in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the 45th meeting of top bankers and economists, and it's known as Jackson Hole for short, and it's more like a black hole, right, down which go our interest-bearing debt payments to these banksters. That aside, I was talking about Dr. Oliver Hadorn, the author of Social Credit Economics, again, nothing to do with the Chinese surveillance and punishment system. And that has to do with Douglas Social Credit, a particular application of a form of economics or an orientation of it that is very conducive to freedom, very much so. That being said, the two kinds of inflation that Dr. Hadorn correctly points out are demand pull and cost push. And what comes out of this article, sort of one of the lessons to be learned among the overall report that it gives on what went on and how to understand the Jackson Hole meeting, the lesson to be drawn here, and it's very important, is that the vast majority of the inflation we see is not demand pull. It is not that we're printing too much money and there's so much money going around in people's pockets, businesses, individuals, whatnot, that it's making each dollar worth less, and therefore things become more expensive in the price tag. That does happen to a point at certain intervals. The ongoing, steady, nonstop version or type of inflation is cost push. And that's where you have anything from property taxes to utility costs to shortages of materials to you name it, especially the interests on loans that are obtained by small businesses, wholesalers, retailers, so on and so forth in the commercial sphere. All those costs are passed on to the end consumer. The cost of money, that is the interest charges. The cost of labor, that is people receiving wages and salaries so they can actually buy some of the products that are made. And all that passing on of those costs, especially ever-increasing property taxes, that's another big one along with interest charges. The passing on of those costs, the pushing of those costs onto the end consumer is cost push inflation. It's much more ongoing. It's much more endemic, you might say, whereas the other demand pull is more sporadic, and it depends on a lot of factors. First of all, to have true demand pull inflation, you have to have more money in circulation than the overall productive output. It's when too much money chases too few goods. And as a general rule, that almost never happens. During the pandemic, due to the production shortages in the pandemic, it comes closer to that, and that may have been sparked a little bit. It's hard to ferret out all the exact figures and data to make that judgment. However, the situation overall is such where the cost push inflation is much more prevalent and ongoing, in fact, practically relentless. And it's important to note also that something like property tax is a major expense that businesses and individuals incur. And businesses, of course, are going to try and pass at least some of that burden on to others down the chain, including the end consumer. A lot of these property taxes themselves are based on the debt-based money system. If you look at a tax bill that your county produces that shows where your property tax payments go to show you how the money is allocated, it'll show services, yes, where your money directly provides a service. It might be a dial-a-ride mass transit service, a busing service to bus people around. It might be to fund a local college, help fund a local college. It'll be your K-12 primary school bill, where your local taxes are combined with state matching funds to fund the public schools. But it's also the debts incurred by school districts, the debts incurred by counties, the debts incurred by subdivisions of the counties for all sorts of things, improving water systems, paving main streets within cities, within municipalities, improving sewage systems, and on and on and on. And that's all because we are in a borrowing society. Money comes into existence as a borrowed form of debt. It's born as debt. And so, like individuals, counties, school districts, and cities and towns must borrow. In a non-debt-based system, and the American Monetary Institute once pointed this out, you could have basically tax-free grants of money when the government would create money directly rather than borrowing it from the Federal Reserve banks. You would have directly issued interest-free U.S. notes rather than interest-bearing Federal Reserve notes, so long as the U.S. notes are produced in quantities that are roughly in harmony with the general productive output and not in excess of that output. And then money for school districts could be in the form of block grants through the states, from the federal government through the states. The same thing for roads, bridges, and scores of different types of public works and public endeavors. And as such, there no longer would be borrowing to fund those endeavors. And then therefore, you wouldn't have near the property taxes that people get hammered with and businesses get hammered with at the state and county level. Therefore, you would have businesses no longer paying such high taxes, maybe in some cases not paying such taxes at all as time goes by, and then that'd be far less cost to pass on to the end consumer from those wholesalers and retailers and manufacturers and so on. See, so when you look at the whole picture, you see how the debt-based money system insinuates itself into almost all aspects of our lives, and it becomes a cost that's passed on to us from the business sector. And then on top of that, we have to pay our own personal property taxes for our homes. And therefore, when you sell a home, you have to boost the price to offset all the taxes you've paid over the years when you lived in the home. So even there, the costs work their way on to the end consumer. In that particular case, whoever might buy your house is going to pay a higher price. So interesting it is, and instructive it very much is, to look at cost push inflation and not the often talked about, and I feel exaggerated, demand pull inflation. Enough said, that's just a larger lesson to draw out of this article that I wrote about the Jackson Hole Bankers Meeting, again published in the most recently printed American Free Press, the next AFP, which has articles I've already talked about coming up, that goes to press this coming Friday, I believe it is. Now, the last issue, and I wouldn't mind taking callers on much of what I've talked about today. The number, I believe, is 512-248-8252. That's 512-248-8252. And I believe other number still works. I'm not remembering it right now, but the most commonly used one is 512-248-8252. Enough said about that, but I wanted to deal one more time, at least for the time being, on the Roe v. Wade issue, Roe v. Wade being overturned back in the summer, the early summer. And I cannot even believe just how much the mass media cartel, not that I'm surprised, but I'm quite exasperated by it, how much the mass media cartel misstates this issue in the most fundamental way. I don't know if you all heard it out there in Radio Land, but this past Sunday, when Meet the Press came on with Chuck Todd, I call it Press the Meat, they had someone else who was having a bellyache about what the high court did in overturning Roe. And one statement I want to make before I continue to finish out today's show is that I still hear a lot of this refrain that Roe was only overturned, or the main reason it was overturned was to cause more division in the country. So therefore, the implication is that it was overturned in a disingenuous fashion or a manipulative fashion, almost solely to cause disunity among all the other things that divide the American people. And I take strong exception to this. It is a divisive issue by its very nature. That can't be helped. But I see no strong evidence, and I don't think anyone has ever produced strong evidence, that the court leaked this matter. They leaked the original opinion by Samuel Alito about overturning Roe, and ended up overturning Roe almost solely, if not solely, to be a divisive measure. And I'd like someone to produce real evidence of that. Until they do that, I think that really needs to be laid to rest, because while this issue cannot help but being divisive by its very nature, when you consider what's at stake here, the real issue is how much people misunderstand about how important it was to overturn Roe. There is no more explicit form of tyranny than a private sector company, a private enterprise, a corporate enterprise dealing with billions of dollars. And that billions of dollars is an industry, not a doctor's treatment, not a group of hospitals, a private for-profit industry that has killed over 61 million pre-born babies since 1973. No war, no genocide, no enterprise, no group of FEMA camps, no pending specter of FEMA camps, nothing can match the lethality, the deadliness of this industry, which is still going on in many of our states, too many of them, in fact, since Roe v. Wade was overturned, rightfully and properly and deservedly overturned. Let there be no mistake. Samuel Alito, writing for the majority, quite the smart barrister, I must say. I had underestimated him in times past. He made it so clear, and this is what was on Meet the Press this past Sunday. They keep saying that the court took away the constitutional right of women to have an abortion. This must be made achingly clear. Alito made it so clear. He said, we hold that Roe and Casey, the Casey decision of 1992, must be overturned. The Constitution makes no reference to abortion, which is correct. And no such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision. Repeat, no such right is implicitly protected by any constitutional provision, including the one on which the defenders and of Roe and Casey now chiefly rely, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. That provision has been held to guarantee some rights that are not mentioned in the Constitution, but any such right must be deeply rooted in this nation's history and traditions. Alito continued, and I see we have a couple callers. The right to abortion, such as it's claimed to exist, does not fall within this category. Again, the so-called right to abortion does not fall within this category, as Alito wrote. Until the latter part of the 20th century, such a right was entirely unknown in American law. Indeed, when the 14th Amendment was adopted, three quarters of the states made abortion a crime at all stages of pregnancy. Roe's defenders characterized the abortion right, quote unquote, as similar to the rights recognized in past court decisions involving matters such as intimate sexual relations, contraception, and marriage. But abortion is fundamentally different, as both Roe and Casey acknowledged, because it destroys what those decisions call fetal life. And what the law now before us, the Mississippi state law, describes as an unborn human being. So you see, what this boils down to unequivocally and unambiguously is that there was no right for the court to overturn. There never was a constitutional right to abortion. Yes, it's a medical alternative if you want to basically distort the meaning of the word medical. Yes, it's an option that many women, I would say too many, have exercised, but it was never the right on the it was never a right on the constitutional level. It never made it to that high of a place where it could be considered like a right to free speech, to bear arms, an actual recognizable constitutional right. It never made it to that level. It never was one. So there is no way, contrary to what so many on Meet the Press and myriad other media are saying, there is no way that the court took away a woman's constitutional right to abortion, because as Alito correctly and accurately and really unchallengingly spelled out, there never was such a right to begin with. So no right can be taken away that didn't exist in the first place. We have to clear the air on this. There was no right to begin with. When the court passed this in 73, they conjured up a right that didn't exist. They used all sorts of machinations that really were more like legislating, making law, not adjudicating. And that conjured up a false constitutional right. Alito discovered the falsity, outlined it factually, and therefore the court overturned Roe on that basis, because there never was such a right. So you can't take away a right that doesn't exist in the first place. And I believe that pretty much puts this issue to rest. So let's take the callers while we still can in the order received. Pat from Texas, are you still with us?
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Pat.
You were talking about Mike Lindell. He put out on 829 on his Frank's speech channel, Save Your County, Get Your Cast Vote Records Now, CVR. But he said on September 3rd, 2022, the federal protections for the records under the Title 52, Section 20701 comes to an end, allowing the legal destruction of those records. That's what's bad. And he told a way that you can find out if your county has already got it. And I doubt my county has, but I forgot about it, and I thought it was too late. But there is.
Let me add, Pat, real quick, let me add that you're right. That was the September 3rd deadline. Some states like Georgia require 2 more months or 24 months. The federal law was 22 months after the November 2020 election, and that 22-month period ended September 3rd of 2022, very recently. But in whatever states they have their own laws for ballot retention, then they can go longer than the federal law, but not shorter. So Georgia, they've still got 2 more months approximately, a little bit less. Other states may have state laws that make them keep those records from the 2020 election longer. But I thank you for that. I was aware of the deadline, but because of all the differences at the state level, I still wanted to put it out there. And even under the federal law, even though they can destroy those records as of September 3rd, it doesn't mean they have to. So just a point of clarity, but I appreciate you bringing that up.
Well, I want to bring your newspaper to credit for telling me who Laura Presley was here in Texas. And
True Texas Elections LLC. Yeah, I know Laura.
Well, I'm sure I don't give her any money anymore, and I haven't really yet heard from her lately, but I don't know if she took care of that for this county, because she is interested in this county, but I'm sure she has done so much for Texas elections. People, if they could get a Laura Presley everywhere, they would not be afraid to vote. Okay?
Very true. And, Pat, you have to take another caller before we end today.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing that.
Laura up next. Laura from Michigan, go right ahead.
Hang up.
Is Laura still with us?
Larry Fink, what I want to ask you, are we now in authoritarian capitalism? Is that what we're into now?
Say again, what's your question?
Authoritarian capitalism. They're going to tell us all what to do.
I call it monopoly capitalism, but yes, you could call it authoritarian capitalism, where a very tiny minority runs the roost and makes the rules. But yeah, I think that's a fair thing to call it.
Yes. These super rich corporations think they can run us now. Run our lives.
So true. Hello.
Okay, that's all. I just wanted to ask you that question.
It is.
Okay, bye.
That you were looking for a customer.
Uh-huh. Thanks for calling, Laura. Well, go on. I have to take this call, ladies and gentlemen. Go on. truthhound2@yahoo.com.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
My email is truthhound, truthhound, the numeral 2@yahoo.com.
Okay, yeah.
And that would be a printable thing?
It's something it printable.
Okay, do I have to have it on a lanyard?
You just will be issued, it'll be a ticket. So then you can go in and see the performance. If you want to take any photos or anything extra, if you want to do anything extra, then the day of the event, I would be able to put you in touch with our executive director, and then he can help coordinate anything else.
Is there going to be a press conference beforehand or afterwards?
I'm sorry, a what?
A press conference with Mr. Turnbull?
There is not a press conference, no. There's going to be a dinner beforehand, and he's going to make an appearance, but I don't know. It's always up to the speaker, so it may be very brief. I don't know if he'll take questions, that sort of thing. So, but there's not a scheduled press conference, no.
Oh, that's really unfortunate. What's your first name again?
It's Karen.
Okay, can I call you back at this number if I have any other questions?
Yes, you can. Now, there are a couple of other box office associates that work here, so you may reach them instead. I'm not here all the time, but I will let them know about this, that I'm giving you the press comp tickets and that you may call with more questions.
Okay, thank you. Good enough for now. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, that's the call I mentioned that I would have to take because it's very hard to get a hold of those people to arrange to cover the Australian PM, Malcolm Turnbull, this coming Thursday here in Southwest Michigan. And if there was any break in the flow of information there, talking to the callers, including Laura from Michigan, I apologize about that. I was juggling two things there. And for today's show, we are looking at just another minute or two to go. But I hope to be covering that. It's unfortunate there's probably not going to be a press conference of Malcolm Turnbull, the former PM of Australia, this Thursday. It's at Lake Michigan College. But nevertheless, we'll see what we can do to get some information there. I understand Mr. Turnbull might have been involved somehow in the COVID crackdown. And Australia was one of the worst places to be during the COVID crackdown. Among other issues, we'll check to see about his involvement with the World Economic Forum, whether he's totally on board with the climate change thing. And so that'll be very interesting. I'd like to ask him also about, I believe his name is Daniel Andrews, one of the worst Australian tyrants during COVID. So we'll see what happens. There should be a story there from that event at ukcolumn.org, where I also do some reporting. And I want to thank listeners, again, pardon to the callers if there was any break in the flow there. But I want to thank the callers and thanks everybody for tuning in and hearing my update. And stay tuned for the next show here on RBN. Everybody have a great day.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee by going to rbnhemppaste.com and ordering a trial pack of Happy Packets for $5 with free shipping. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.